Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Welcome to the headquarters of the violent anarcho-Bidenist movement, here to destroy all government and replace it with a fairly similar government.
I liked Katie's better.
Nope.
Well, that's because you like malarkey.
Yeah, you're a pro-malarkey. Your malarxist stance has been well documented.
We're going to be talking about things election-related because, oh my God, that's in 2 weeks.
Hey, yeah.
Actually, it's already started millions and millions and millions and millions.
Almost times. 30 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 30 million is what I wrote down. Have already voted, which is impressive. I believe I read a statistic that already 70% of total votes in 2016 have already been cast. That's wild.
That is wild.
But I wanted to start this episode off by acknowledging that we've had a prediction come down the pipeline from Pat Robertson.
Prediction. Yay.
Pat Robertson has appended everything because he's let us know that he's talked to God, and God says that Trump will win the re-election. And not only that, but this will bring about the end of time. The end days.
Finally.
I mean, you know, if I actually thought a Trump victory would lead to the end of all life in the universe, I might vote for the man. Just like, yeah, let's do it. Let's just see what happens. Get this shit done.
He's really tempting. Really dangling that little prize in front of us.
Except that he's been
wrong.
Don't
threaten me with a good time, Pat.
He's been wrong so many times before. How can we trust this?
It's like when Trump goes up on stage. He's like, if I lose, I'm going to leave the country. It's like, all right.
Please.
Well,
do you mean it?
We'll do it.
Truly?
We'll do it.
But that was just a fun little anecdote to get us started today.
What country do you think he'll go to? That's my question. What country do you think?
Saudi Arabia, Russia, North Korea. Mm-hmm.
We should start a
Brazil, maybe. A poll. Bolivia, the newly socialist Bolivia.
We should start
Bolivia. Maybe just Cuba.
I think we should start a poll on this.
I don't think he'll leave anywhere. He'll go anywhere. But
no, he won't go to another country. He won't go to jail. He'll live in his tower and be fine.
Yeah, just like he did before.
Exactly. Yes. Nothing will change for that guy.
Yeah.
I was just trying to say the word poll so we can transition to Robert talking about polls.
Oh, I love polls. Huge.
Speaking of transitioning to that topic.
Yeah, so I guess the first caveat is that nothing I say or that anyone else will say prior to the election will assuage anyone's nervousness about how this is going at all. Because that's just the way it goes. At this point, more than 29 million, I think like 29.6 million or some shit like that, people from 45 states have voted, either by mail or in person. Nearly half of those votes, almost 14.2 million, came from Democratic voters. Republican voters have returned about 10 million votes to compare. So, you know, Democrats a really significant edge heading into the election, just in part because, like, Democrats tend to early vote and vote by mail more often, though the virus does mean that this is, like, a different situation than a normal election. So it's broadly speaking a good sign that there's such an edge among Democrats. And yeah, so far Democrats have returned more ballots than Republicans in 32 separate states. In Florida and Minnesota, Democratic early voters are beating Republicans by about 20 percentage points. In New Hampshire, Democratic voters are ahead by 36 points. But the parties are kind of like more or less even in Georgia, Wisconsin, and Michigan. So again, you know, when the big vote day comes, Republicans are, you know, because they don't believe in science or plagues,
right,
they're more likely to come out on election day itself. That said, there's also more Democratic voters in general than Republican voters, so this is, again, broadly good news, you would say, the stuff that we're getting from early voting. Not conclusive, but broadly good news. So that's nice.
It's real nice.
It's nice. Yeah. It's nice to read these sort of things right before you go to sleep. And then when you wake up, read something else that's terrifying. And
oh, you mean Jordan B. Peterson coming back? Yes, I was scared by that too.
There are all sorts of caveats, but yes, these are all excellent early indicators. But you're right when you say it, obviously this is because of coronavirus, so we don't know how all of this. It's hard to predict anything because this is such an abnormal year in so many ways.
Yeah, it's like anytime you say like, well, yeah, normally, you know, this means this, but also there's a giant plague that's killed 200,000 plus people and has shut down large chunks of our normal life. So like, it's kind of hard to, and we're also, it looks like trending virus-wise to be worse than things were at the worst period earlier this year in the spring and summer. So that's going to be fun. That's going to be cool.
Historically speaking, just because more people vote for one candidate doesn't mean that candidate's going to win.
Yeah, that's why I'm focusing on swing states a lot. And I think a lot of the good analysis is. So kind of the two most critical states, I think, I mean, maybe three, like Pennsylvania is a big deal. Florida is obviously huge. And then so is Arizona. And people will say that, like, yeah, if Trump wins Florida, he wins, like, the majority of predicted elections. But also, if Trump loses Arizona, he loses in the majority of predicted elections. Mm-hmm. And right now, Biden and Trump are pretty close to neck and neck in Florida. But Biden has a really significant edge in Arizona. He's up by, like, I don't know, 4 points or so by 538's average. But there have been some that have shown him up by as much as seven. And he's had a pretty consistent edge in Arizona. Whereas it looks like his edge in Florida's tightening.
Yes.
Yeah. Most recent poll showed him up by just 1 point, which is within the margin of error. 538's average has him up by like three. It's really hard to say where either of those states is going to go. Broadly speaking, Florida seems like a toss-up, potentially leaning, you know, either way. And Arizona seems to be leaning Biden, but not by a clearly safe number. Now, one of the good things about Arizona is that Maricopa County, which is the largest county in the United States in terms of geographical area and also a very populous county, has been really consistently leaning towards Biden for months now. So that's a good step. And also
the McCain
respecters. Yeah. Yeah.
Florida. Yeah. I mean, some of these were going to be tough anyway. And, you know, I do take some amount of joy or solace in the fact that it's tightening and that these are actually competitive races. That's great. But the Florida stuff is, I heard this one segment on This American Life basically talking about how the ground game in Florida from the Biden campaign has been non-existent. Pandemic, sure, but in contrast, Republicans have been door knocking, have been doing organizing. You know, there wasn't even a field office for the Biden campaign, apparently, until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I've heard that generally about the Biden campaign.
It's alarming for me.
That is very alarming and weird. It's weird. But also, they didn't have a really great, good ground game during the primaries either.
So take comfort in that.
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, look,
hard to gauge.
There's a lot of reasons for this. A big one being, again, pandemic. And phone banking is just about as effective as door-to-door knocking, especially since you can look at it and say, like, oh, well, you can cover much more territory, reach out to more people phone banking than you can walking from house to house. But I mentioned this to you guys before we started recording, but what we're seeing in swing states, okay, so historically, Democrats have been much better about registering people to vote and getting mail-in ballots. But over the past 4 years, especially in swing states, Republicans have been focusing on that. And so it's unclear, again, how that is going to affect turnout ultimately, et cetera, et cetera. And here, this is from Time Magazine, and you know they're talking about all of this stuff, but they say, take for instance Florida. The voter registration numbers show a narrowing gap to a 1.3 percentage point voter registration advantage for Democrats. 4 years ago, Democrats were ahead in voter registration by party by twice that and still lost Florida by 1.2 percentage points. Anyway, that's a lot of talk about percentages and stuff, but it's all just data to be taking in when we're thinking about this stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's just how relevant all of this is and how much it's actually going to affect the end result.
Impossible. And in fact,
literally,
you're probably
impossible. Yeah.
Driving yourself ill by focusing too much on all the different things that might happen.
Possibly unhealthy.
Possibly unhealthy. Profoundly so. Like every aspect of our political system.
Utter malarkey is what it is.
Which should not be reformed or changed in any way.
Yeah.
I really like, what did you say? Malarkist?
Malarxists.
Malarxist Leninist.
Yeah.
We like it.
The thing that's frustrating. So I was listening to the 538 podcast recently. My opinions on Nate Silver are well known. But again, he's pretty good when it comes to analyzing polls. And one of the things that he'll point out is that people are kind of obsessing too much over how 2016 went, as opposed to kind of looking at this election within the grand scheme of other elections. And I don't know how much I agree with that, because political trends have changed so much just in the last 4 to 8 years that maybe it's actually better to look at the most recent election, because it dealt with all this crazy shit like foreign influence campaigns and whatnot in the United States. And I don't know how much I agree with that part. But the thing that he did point out that I think is kind of worth saying and valid is that when Hillary Clinton was at like the highest extent of her lead, she was, only a couple of points behind where Biden is now in most polls. So broadly similar, and similar chances of winning, and she still lost. But that was like an outlier for the campaign, and most of the campaign had been much more narrow in terms of like her edge over Trump. She only got a big edge right after the Access Hollywood shit. So the point that Nate makes that I think is a pretty reasonable one is that Biden's lead has been really, really consistent for months now, even prior to the coronavirus. And there's not really much of a sign that it's like, you can find a couple of polls that say it's tightening, but there are as many polls that say it's really not. So that could be a good sign.
I feel like we've even mentioned this before, if you even just look visually at here's the polling for the entire election of Trump versus Hillary Clinton and the entire election so far of Trump versus Joe Biden.
Yeah.
It fluctuates constantly with Clinton.
Yeah.
And Biden has never really slipped. And that is national polls, from what I
understand. Yeah, that's national in most of the swing states. He's had a pretty consistent lead in a lot of the swing states, Florida being a big exception.
Just seems Hillary Clinton was a very uniquely bad candidate for that year, and
or any year,
or any year. I'm being very generous.
Yeah.
It just seems like from the get go, everyone was like, "Oh, Trump or Biden? I'd rather have Joe Biden."
Yeah.
And that hasn't really shifted that much. And Trump is certainly not helping himself.
No, and he's, we'll talk a little bit about where he's lost support the most. I also wanted to point out, I just found, just like a couple of hours before we started recording this episode, CNN released a poll of poll averages across 10 of the battleground states, which showed tight races in 7 states and Joe Biden ahead in averages of the other 3, all of which Trump won in 2016. So Biden has a significant lead and a sizable advantage over Trump in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Pennsylvania is Biden's largest lead. It's like more than 5 percentage points.
How's Texas looking?
Texas is a swing state now. Yeah. Like CNN has it as a swing state.
Very cool.
Now, I will tell you all, as someone who spent most of his life in Texas, never, ever, ever bet on Texas for anything.
sure.
Yeah. Don't put any hope into Texas because it's Texas.
It is Texas. Interesting thing about Texas, I actually do have a lot of faith in Texas this year. But if you look
you
at the... I know. I apologize.
It's a profoundly bad idea.
That and saying it. In the Beto Mr. Cruz matchup.
Mr. Cruz.
Mr. Cruz. I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I don't want to say the exact numbers. The majority of voters, of the majority of people who were born and raised in Texas, voted for Beto. Mm-hmm. And Ted Cruz got a lot of the votes from people who moved there. So I don't know. I think the heart of Texas is gonna pull through this year.
You shouldn't trust.
I know.
The heart
I should.
Of Texas.
I shouldn't trust the heart of Texas. I shouldn't have said it out loud.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hey,
you
ruined it, Cody.
So I don't know. Like one of the things that CNN points out is that in Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Which are the tightest, you know, these are of the seven really tight swing states. Biden is ahead, but it's tight. Mm-hmm. Texas is the only one of those seven swing states where Trump is numerically ahead. 49% to Biden's 45%. So again, I'm harsh on Texas because I lived there and I broadly despise it. That said, I love a lot of the people there. And a lot should be said about the very, very brave and hardworking activists in Texas who have been fighting tooth and nail to get to this point, to where you can actually say Texas could swing. Like it's
wild.
A real like that. That it's an incredible accomplishment just to be able to say that, given everything they're up against. Where like for one thing, Texas has been noted as like the hardest state to vote in.
Yeah,
excellent. Great. Excellent.
Yeah.
I've also read, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get into this in a little bit, about Trump's polling and influence with Latino voters, Black voters. Shockingly, he doesn't do that poorly with Latino voters, but there are different sects of it we can get into. But there are a lot in Texas, more and more Latino voters in Texas that are trending towards Democrats.
Yeah, Trump's support among Latinos kind of varies. Like he has a lot more support in Florida because of, you know, Cuba and
Cuba.
Castro and people's, you know, attitudes towards socialism as a result of that. But Texas is a very different animal.
Yes, it's like very regional.
Yeah.
How his influence in those demographics are.
Yeah, and I suspect that the narrowing in Texas, and who knows, Biden may have said something since, but like you'll notice it's actually been a while in election terms since Biden's made a big gun control statement, and I think it's because some of these places in the South started tightening up, and hopefully
that's
intelligent people are
he
like,
hasn't.
Hey, Joe, maybe shut up about that. We might win Texas, but we're not if you start talking about guns, because it's Texas.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. Like he may make some big statement about banning all assault rifles tomorrow. It's one of those things. Like we just got the news an hour ago that his transition team is like at least like vetting Republicans for potential.
I have that written down too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's hard to tell what that means because I read the text of the article and it's like, oh well, they haven't actually picked anybody and they're not going to make any announcements until November 3rd. They could just be teasing that they're going to pick some Republican people to try to get the Republican vote because they haven't committed to anything.
Yeah, but the thing is,
Ohio,
is that
you wanna go
it
Ohio.
Doesn't actually. They looking through that, it doesn't seem like that actually will garner him support from the right. But
it does seem unlikely.
It does risk enraging the left. It's just I could have done without that one today. Names being
expected.
Floated, possible names being floated for a Biden cabinet. Meg Whitman, the CEO of Quibi.
Yeah.
Former CEO.
Oh, Quibi did so
eBay.
Well. She knows how to run a country.
She knows how to run a country.
Right. Didn't she already lose? Didn't she try running for governor in California and lost?
Yeah, but now she runs Quibi, so that means she's a winner.
They're trying
Quibi,
to sell Quibi.
The entertainment powerhouse that took America by storm.
Yeah. Former Ohio governor John Kasich.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, because Kasich did his like weird thing at the convention. And I don't know how much that moves the needle. Jeff Flake was an unbelievable name to read.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Former rep Charlie Dent.
Who's
a lobbyist now?
Yeah,
this is
sort of like
bad.
It's been like this for months, though. Like, every like month, there's an article, like, they're talking about doing this, they're talking about getting this person, or this person's on the transition team, and it's always some lobbyist or, like, some corporate piece of shit. And they've been, like, it's been a warning and a possibility or a probability for a long time. But yeah, this just seems like a story of, like, yeah, we'll throw out these names. Maybe it'll move the needle one way or the other.
But we don't expect it to.
Right.
I think we need to pivot to an ad break.
You know, how are we going to do that, though?
You know what's better than Texas?
No.
California?
I don't know.
Virtually everything, but particularly the products and services that support this podcast, oh, yeah. None of which are legally coming. Allowed to be sold in Texas. So to hell with you all, one of our largest states in terms of listeners.
Sure. Yeah.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back. And we're talking about a way we could fix some of our electoral problems. And I just want to once again suggest my plan, which is that we hollow out the entire middle of the country. We force all the adults to live in either coast. And we turn the entire center of the United States into a giant open-air child prison. And kids live there from let's say, about age 1 to age 18. And they have, you know, they do whatever, like however they can survive, they do it. I'm going to assume they're going to form into feral packs and have crude tribal wars with one another. And then at age 18, men in black helicopters tranquilize them and take them to San Bernardino, California, where they have to work as accountants for 4 years. And then they're legally adults.
What Robert's doing is pitching us on his dystopian young adult series.
I think this would solve every single contemporary problem we have in the United States.
But what about the fact that the coasts are our coast is on fire anyway?
Yeah, I think it'll solve that too. No, you're going to have so many less people driving.
Oh,
because the whole Midwest will be hollowed out.
And we're going to have to cut down all the trees in order to make room for people. So I guess there's less ground to burn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Yeah,
I thought you were going to say hollow out the middle of America and make it a giant ball pit, but you said child prison.
You said child prison. You said that.
Can there be a ball pit in the prison for the children?
Yeah, I mean that it because it's supposed
it's
to
exactly
be just
COVID
crude
friendly,
wilderness
but
filled with rattlesnakes.
Okay.
Which again will also cut down on the population. So really every major problem the United States has will be solved by my plan.
Weed them out, sort them out, make them accountants for 4 years.
Yeah,
and then
in San Bernardino.
Them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they're adults.
Okay. And then, but when you're adults, you have rights and freedoms, or is it just
Yeah, okay. No, absolutely. At age 22, after you finished your time as an accountant in San Bernardino, you get rights.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. This is well thought out, and I don't
it's
know why you haven't
a
run
platform.
For office yet.
It's a platform. Yeah.
This is what I will
that.
Be running on in 2024.
Huh? What do we want to talk about in this section, huh?
Well, let's talk about race.
We're running
as
for
a
government?
Group of exclusively white people. Yes, Sophie,
yeah,
we're running for president in 2024. Okay. As a group of exclusively white people, we should talk about race and voting in the United States.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're the most qualified to discuss this.
Oh, yeah, the only qualified
I've been
people.
Doing a lot of listening, and now it's time to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making fun of myself, not the movement. I just want that to be clear.
So about half of likely young voters say they prefer Joe Biden's Joseph Robinette, you know, Jarbid.
Joe
Bido. Yeah. I'm coming up with nicknames for him on the spot. None
Joe
of them
president.
Are good. Yeah. And this is based on the stuff I'm going to start with is based on a Forbes under 30 study, which was powered by John Zogby, whose last name I think is probably fake. I know he's a big
a
name
Muppet.
In polling. I still don't believe it.
No, yeah. He's a Muppet.
Muppet. Thank you. Yes.
Pretends to do polling.
Like a Zogby is something you buy in a Toys R Us.
Yes.
So, yeah, the margin of Joe Biden's young support has actually narrowed since June. Biden hit like 60% during that period. He's down to 57. So it has narrowed a bit. And it seems like Trump's convention may have had some impact on this. His support with young voters went from 31% to 35%. Although it's worth noting that that's no change at all from where things were in January.
Okay. So it's just, it like bounced back, basically.
They also may be conflating things that aren't, because I have trouble imagining anybody under the age of 30 watching a single second of President Trump's or any of
convention,
the televised
any
convention.
Of it. Like, any come of it. On.
Yeah. That said, that's how Forbes.
I wonder what else happened that week that could have done that, because that is wild to me.
Yeah, it's
what
it
week
seems,
was it?
I don't know. Whatever week Trump's thing was.
his weird the best is yet to come shouting match happened.
Yeah, good times. So yeah, and it does seem like the George Floyd uprising protests, whatever you want to call them, had an impact on this. Joe Biden currently leads 70 to 20% among young black voters, which is actually a decline. He was at 77% in June, and his support among Hispanics has dipped from 66% to 62% in 3 months, while Trump climbed a similar amount. So number one, it's worth noting that Trump is polling a lot better among young black and Hispanic people. Primarily young black and Hispanic men than he was earlier in the year, a bit better than he was earlier in the year, and significantly better than he did in 2016. He's actually up to 22% of young Hispanic voters in 2016, and he's up to 35%.
35. I read 30.
It depends.
That's even
worse.
I
mean, it depends on the polls. This is UCLA Nationscape. Some will say 30, but it's certainly a significant increase among young Hispanic, primarily men, but just voters in general. And he's had an even larger growth among young black voters, from about 10% in 2016 to 21% in 2020. Now there's a number of reasons for this. Most of the places I found, I'm looking at like kind of Forbes and 538 and, I believe an NBC poll, suggests that this is because young black voters and young black men in particular don't trust the government, and Trump is an anti-establishment candidate somehow, even though he's now also the president. Mm. There's a lot that's been written about this. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet there's not one reason.
Yeah.
Online, I've seen a predictable amount of frustration with Kamala as the pick, given her past as a prosecutor. It just really depends. I think that a lot of the Latino votes, like you said, it's, you know, the younger male Latinos, people that are, you know, born here in America, but maybe don't have a college education, or it depends, like we said earlier, regionally, on the demographics in the region. But it is definitely confusing when you look at it big picture. You're like, how?
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a number of things. So like one of the things that was noted in the 538 write-up is that, and this is talking about young black men, 35% of 18 to 29 year old black adults agreed that although they didn't always like Trump's policies, they liked his strong demeanor and defiance of the establishment. Conversely, just 10% of those 60 and older said the same. And there's another one I found. Sorry, it was Time that I
strong
found this quote
demeanor.
From Sam Fullwood III, a fellow in the Center of Congressional and Presidential Studies at the American University. And with a name like Sam Fullwood III, you know he understands the needs of young black
the
and
youths.
Hispanic voters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quote, they are easily disillusioned and disengaged. That's universal to youth. Young African Americans don't have confidence that the system will or can function in a way that will advantage their lives. They have no evidence or little evidence that the system will improve their lives. When they engage with the system, more often than not, it is adverse. In some ways, it is destructive and life-threatening to them. As a result of that, they have little inclination to engage with that system. So, you know.
I mean, that makes sense.
One man's opinion. Yeah, it does to an extent make sense.
And also, like, you know, young people are susceptible to propaganda. They spend all their time online. There's tons of that online.
And the Trump campaign has worked really hard to reach out to young black men in particular, and at least young Hispanic men in Florida. So, like, some of this may be seeing, like, the fact that some of that has worked. And again, it's worth noting, like, in the way I've seen some places like the Daily Wire talk about it, is like Trump is attracting historic support from these groups. And it's like, I guess you could say that for a Republican.
Right. It's historic, I guess.
Like, it's also, again, not nearly a majority, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's worth noting, and here's what's really odd here, just in terms of like kind of comparing this to 2016, is that while Trump has gained, kind of no matter who you look at, he has made significant inroads with Black and Hispanic voters, young Black and Hispanic voters, I should say, because his numbers with older ones have not really been impacted at all. While he has made inroads there, he's lost a lot of ground with white people, and most particularly old white people.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and the big reason for that seems to be the coronavirus, because old people are scared of dying.
Yeah. I mean, they saw him do the things. They don't like it. You can look at, Trump's making his own attack ads for himself. He takes off his mask, and then Joe Biden, literally all he has to do is put on a mask and say, "I don't want you to die." That's it.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, on several occasions, Trump bragged and like attacked Joe Biden because he said he was going to listen to the scientists. He did a whole speech at his rally, like, Biden's going to listen to the scientists.
Yeah, it's amazing.
To Dr. Fauci. All Biden did in response to that was cut an ad together with that quote and say, "Yes, go for Joe Biden. I will listen to scientists." That is the phrase that was used in the ad. And that's a good messaging for older people who do not want to die because of this global pandemic.
It's just such a wild stance to take. Don't trust scientists.
It's completely.
But trust me, the president, the grifter president, and my vaccine promises and stuff. The programming, like, how do you expect that plays?
It works on some people. Like, I mean, it's why it seems.
I can see it working on younger people more than older people.
It seems completely absurd, for sure. But like, his whole brand of fascism is completely irrational, because that's what fascism is.
Yeah.
And like, earlier today, Dave Rubin went on his show and talked about how you shouldn't trust scientists, because in sci-fi movies, there are scientists that are evil. Because he's fucking stupid. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Oh my, is exactly the correct response to that. You know, irrationality works. Yeah, we don't need to Rubin it up, but my God, man.
Dave Rube.
Awesome.
Awesome.
I'm.
What else we got here?
He's a champion.
Fuck.
Want to talk about PragerU?
A little bit, because we're talking a little bit about the youth vote and stuff, and Dave Rubin.
This is actually a perfect chef's kiss transition. I'll stop commenting on it and allow you to speak.
No, you're right. It's good. We should talk. We should spend more time.
I'm gonna keep interrupting you, Cody.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What are we even talking about?
2020, Cody.
So we're talking about like the youth and like, you know, there's propaganda out there online. PragerU, which according to their Prager University, according to their website, is not an accredited university. It says so.
Oh no, really?
It says right always there on
my
their website.
Favorite disclaimer.
In black and white, very clearly, we
Prager
are not
university,
an accredited
university,
not
a university,
not a university.
Cody, quick question: am I a university?
Absolutely.
You are
Thank
a
you.
Universe.
Okay, yeah. That's good to know.
No,
okay.
Yeah,
you are comprised of multitudes.
Hey, never doubt yourself. Yeah,
and you know what?
A university.
You both have master's degrees, and Sophie, you get a doctorate.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Well, yeah. So
right.
There
I'll
you
work,
go.
I'll work harder.
You can all apply for jobs in whatever field you want.
Well, it's just it's tangentially election related, because more and more PragerU videos are being shown in schools, high schools,
That's good.
Middle schools, and colleges. Colleges I understand a bit more. That's like the time when you're like, "All right, we're all like kind of adults and we're going to talk about this. This is the time to discuss or whatever." But PragerU's mission from the very beginning, like it's funded by the Wilkes brothers, who are fracking billionaires. They're very hyper-conservative, fundamentalist Christians who believe a lot of, they're like homophobic. They believe God and fossil fuels. It's all like they're wild people, and they're billionaires, and they fund PragerU. Even though PragerU says we need your donations to stay alive. No, they're being funded by billionaires. Don't give them your money. But they have always had this idea that the left is indoctrinating kids in schools with their history and their science. And they lament this because they're not indoctrinating them enough. PragerU, Dennis Prager specifically, wants to indoctrinate your children. And he's upset because he thinks that they're being indoctrinated by other people. So PragerU has set up this thing called PrEP.
Isn't that the HIV medicine?
Well, yes. okay. But to them, it stands for PragerU Educators and Parents. I don't know if they did this on purpose or not. It's unclear.
That's not good. PragerU gets the first two letters, like PR. Anyway, continue.
I mean, yeah. No, it's very... PWEP. P-U-E-P. That's something that would work. But basically, it's a new program of theirs, launched very recently, on the top of their page. Schools have been peddling leftist propaganda. And they're trying to get their videos played in schools and reach parents and educators. That's what their plan has been the entire time. Their articles from years ago were the funders talk about how, yeah, we want to reach young people and influence them. That is their goal. And they're doing that more and more. I keep seeing tweets from people like, oh yeah, I saw a PragerU video in my school. A teacher showed me this, there's a recent article on Huffington Post about a specific incident of this in an Ohio classroom. In a public school, they showed a bunch of videos. You get extra credit for watching PragerU videos.
You guys can't see me because I turned my camera off, but I'm anxiously biting my nails obsessively as you're saying this.
I'm sorry. It's very upsetting insidious. Some of the videos being shown, quote, build the wall, why the right was right, the left ruins everything. Conservatives are the real environmentalists. Oh, here's a great one that brings it back to this episode. How to steal an election, mail-in ballots. That's one of their videos as well. And the issue, one of the main problems with PragerU videos is that they are 5 minutes long. They're very, very dishonest. They use misleading information. They lie. They lie in various ways. And in order to really debunk a PragerU video, you need about 40 minutes to explain why. And you'd be like, well, they're saying this, but actually it's this. And you need to explain their rhetoric because they're lying to you. It's propaganda. To dismantle propaganda is harder than to just release some short little propaganda. Yeah, it's just something to keep an eye out for. I think we'll probably revisit this in the future because it's going to get worse and worse.
This is one of those things that's not going to change with an election result that we like. This is one of those things that is going to keep developing and polarizing our country.
Yes, it's there, and it's like it's in line with Trump's resistance of like the 1619 project and his whole like we're going to do patriotic education, which is I don't love that phrase for public education, but it's in line with that. That's the goal here, and whether or not Trump is reelected, PragerU has that mission, and they have a lot of inroads there. They have tons of subscribers. People donate to them all the time. People don't know how insidious they are sometimes. They had two videos by one of their quote professors. Again, it's not an accredited university by their own admission. They had two videos. One was about the death of comedy. You can't do jokes anymore. And one was why you can't argue with the leftists. Leftists are so unreasonable. The guy who did both of those videos is Owen Benjamin, a Holocaust denier and who is way, way down the alt-right rabbit hole these days. And they scrubbed those videos. They took those videos out, but they made those videos uncritically with this person. It's concerning, I just wanted to bring it up.
If you see this in your life, make sure to push back on it. I saw somebody share, I don't think it was one of the PrEP videos, but share a PragerU. It was back with the you know, demon semen doctor sharing stuff, talking about that and kids. And, you know, and she's some centrist person that I know from Hollywood stuff. And I just was like, look into PragerU a bit. That's not a place that you should be trusting any of the stuff that comes from there. They're intellectually dishonest. And she was like, oh, goodness, I had no idea. So I just encourage you to push back on it when you see it in your life.
And figure out, like, half the videos you see shared, if you Google that title of that video and the word debunk, you'll probably find a video that explains why it's wrong. There are resources out there. But, yeah, push back on it, especially if it's happening in your school. Make sure that that conversation happens.
Yes, if you're a student where this is happening, talk to your teacher about it. Make this a conversation point in the classroom.
Like, exactly,
question why they're making you watch this.
That's what school is for, and that's how you're going to really reach people. Sorry, Katie.
We got to take a quick break. You know what?
You got this. You got this.
Teach you fascism. Ugh, oh, I'm sorry. I'm not Robert.
You know who is an accredited university?
Yeah.
Raytheon U.
Yep.
There
that's
we go.
Right.
You can learn... Pew, pew, pew. Bow.
If you buy any of Raytheon's products, it comes with a free doctorate in whatever, because Raytheon controls all of the levers of power and can grant you everything you desire as long as you don't care about school buses in certain countries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what they said.
Just certain countries.
Certain countries. Not your country yet.
Not yours yet.
Yeah,
Daniel,
yeah.
Choose a good spot to turn.
Oh, God.
Daniel, edit wisely.
No, Daniel, keep all of this in, including us telling you to cut it and then telling you not to cut it. All of it.
Yeah, this part stays.
This part in where I tell you guys I'm going to go pee real quick.
Okay. Yeah.
Cup of
keep
water.
That in. Let's just talk about peeing for a second. Cody?
Excellent.
Okay, here's the
yes,
ads.
Yes, sir. No. I would love to hear about yourself.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, dumb.
And we are back from that.
We sure are.
My camera is still off, but rest assured, guys, it's only because I am masturbating.
Everyone involved in the production of this podcast is always masturbating. That's
my camera is
off.
What we signed. We signed the contract. It said always be masturbating, and we said
ABM.
Okay. So
ABM, guys, ABM.
Yeah. MWCC,
always be masturbating during work conference calls.
That's the long one.
Have tattooed across my throat.
It's good to have that reminder whenever we do this.
Cody, you wanted to talk about something.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about just this brief thing related to the election. We've been seeing various stories. I think we mentioned it last week on either this episode or this show or like our other show, any of the shows. Some fake ballot boxes going up around LA. Just like the president's constant messaging of like, watch the polls, get out there and watch the polls.
Good sign.
Yeah. There was that cop today at doing security at a poll who had a mask that was like a Trump mask, stuff like that. Sunday night of this week in Baldwin Park, a ballot box, an official ballot box, drop box, was on fire, literally just on fire. That's on the inside.
In Los Angeles?
Near LA County Baldwin Park in LA. It's pretty bad. It was around over 200 ballots were involved. That might not seem like a lot, or maybe it does seem like a lot. Kind of irrelevant how many ballots, because somebody lit that ballot box on fire.
Also here in Los Angeles. Yesterday, a friend of mine was notified by their building that a mail truck carrying all of their ballots was robbed, was stopped, and the mail was stolen. all of the ballots that were in for this area were taken.
Wait, what?
Excuse yep. me?
Yeah. I don't have more information other than that. I just confirmed with her and she was like, yeah, we got this message saying like everybody in this building and I guess this neighborhood, this like little, this street are affected.
That's not great.
Okay.
Anyway.
That's cool. We should hear more information about that.
I want to read a story about that.
We will see what happens. More information. That was all the information she had. Obviously anecdotal, but that's what she got from her. And like, it's very frustrating. It's incredibly frustrating. So for her, they hadn't received her ballots. So she was receiving her ballots so she can request another one or just go show up in person and vote at her polling place. But what about people that have cast? You know what I mean? Like, we don't know what the implications of this are. Anyway,
yeah,
sorry to interject
bad.
With that depressing,
no, bad,
not fully fleshed
bad.
Out story.
Katie, bad. That's bad.
I'm not bad. That,
no,
that
Katie,
bad, not
Katie
me bad.
Good. Bad news from Katie Good.
Anyway.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, that's this section about how bad that is and all the tampering and it's
and,
not good.
And just and other stories that we see. And like I start Googling it, but I don't see that many like articles or things that are specifically focused on this. But I've heard from listeners, from friends in other states, the voter intimidation is real. It's happening. People showing up at polls, preventing them from voting. You know, saying this is a bad situation. I'm leaving for today.
Yeah, I see every day that is happening. I wonder why.
Before we go, I think it's worth mentioning this Hunter Biden story because time for the October surprise.
Presidential candidate Hunter Biden.
Yeah, not really a surprise so much as something that we all expected to happen when we were litigating our potential presidential nominees. If you're confused by this story, I get it. Me too. But okay, let's give you a little brief overview. This is from Slate.
Yeah, help me out. Help me out.
I will. Slate will right now. The New York Post claimed in a story published last Wednesday to have obtained a copy of a hard drive from Hunter Biden's laptop that contains emails revealing his foreign business dealings along with personal photos. According to the Post, someone obtained the laptop at a computer repair shop in Delaware, and the data on the hard drive subsequently reached the FBI and Rudy Giuliani. Steve Bannon is said to have notified the Post of the hard drive's existence, and then Giuliani supplied the tabloid with a copy. The Post has now run a series of exposés based on the contents of the hard drive, the most purportedly explosive of which has to do with an email that Hunter Biden supposedly received in 2015 from Vadim Pozharsky, I don't know if I pronounced that right, a board advisor at the Ukrainian energy company Burisma. In it, Pozharsky thanks Hunter Biden for introducing him to then-Vice President Joe Biden. This would seem to be evidence limply supporting the Republicans' allegations that Hunter Biden, who worked for Burisma, had convinced his father to do favors for the Ukrainian company using the powers of the vice presidency. Okay. So there's that. But just for context, months ago, years, I don't know, the big narrative that Trump was pushing against Biden was that he engaged in quid pro quo. Burisma hires Hunter, and Biden uses his influence to fire Viktor Shokin, the corrupt prosecutor who was investigating Burisma. However, their story breaks down because Shokin was not, in fact, investigating Burisma, and that was the problem. Biden did influence his firing. He hasn't denied that. He's bragged about it. But that's because Shokin was actually standing in the way of the investigation of Burisma. In fact, Ukrainian prosecutors and anti-corruption advocates who were pushing for the investigation said the probe had been dormant because of Shokin. And okay, so I said this back when we were originally talking about this story. It's not a good look that the then vice president of America, had any sort of connection with a company that has, ties to a foreign government. Do I think that Joe Biden helped Hunter, his underqualified son, get a job? Yeah, I do. And that's kind of shady.
Sucks.
That is absolutely not something that I'm okay with. And it's a reason why I didn't want Biden to be the nominee. But that's not the story that they're pressing for. And so now here we have this email thing, and it's definitely a big eye roll. First off, how'd they get this hard drive? The story that they claim is that somebody brought this computer to a repair shop in Delaware, didn't pay for the repair. And so the shop owner was like, saw that it had a sticker for the Bo Biden Foundation and decided that they're not going to give it to the Biden family. No, they're going to take it to Rudy Giuliani. What? What? Does Rudy Giuliani have deep ties to Delaware computer repair shops? You know what I mean? Like, what we do know is that Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon and all of them do have ties with the Russian government. So there's that. Like, I don't want to just say we don't have evidence of this, but we do have a lot of people pointing to this as Russian disinformation.
Well, and I think that even, like, another thing that's also likely, it doesn't need to be disinformation. It could also be accurate, and it could have been hacked by the Russian government, and the whole fucking laptop shit can be a
But the framing of it as this is evidence of a crime is a little disinformation-y.
Yeah, because it's, well, yeah, and it also has nothing to do, like, it's not evidence of Joe Biden doing anything.
Exactly.
It's all about his kid, yeah.
And
like we could talk about Giuliani's kids. We could talk about Trump's kids.
Talk about all of Trump's children.
Yeah, yeah.
Hunter Biden isn't the one. I mean, they're pointing to the fact that, like, oh, his son was using, you know, for him to meet with these people, and who knows what dealings that went down. Okay, well, we know what dealings went down with you, Donald Trump. We know a lot of the crimes that your kids have done. And again, it does not seem, again, the original thing that they were pushing, which is about this firing of the prosecutor, is, as he would say, a nothing burger, at least on the surface. However, I can't overstate how much I do not like that a vice president helped his son. His son.
Fuck it. Like, honestly, at this point, fuck it. Like, they're all so corrupt. They're all doing this shit. Giuliani's kids have gotten jobs. Fucking Trump's kids are making money hand over fist with this. Like, giving a shit about this just in the context of Joe Biden right before an election is fucking nonsense. Because
it's nonsense.
Yeah, it's the thing that has always been going on and will always be a problem in our system as long as we vest huge amounts of power in the hands of a fucking gentrified elite.
And it's hard. I think what bugged me the most about this is, okay, we've got people like Glenn Greenwald.
Glenn.
Tweeting about how the mainstream media is so quick to discredit this story as Russian propaganda, but Biden isn't denying the stories. And we are, like, doing the boy who cried wolf kind of a thing. And, like, when Russian disinformation happens, that we aren't going to see it and all this stuff, which is just lending credence to this story and keeping it around. And it has so many echoes of 2016 of emails and confusion and people saying, like, fuck it, they're all bad. And I just wanted to mention it so you're aware of what's happening, so you have information to push back with. And because we were right when we said that this would happen.
We were, weren't we? Interesting. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's nice about it is that so far, people don't seem to give a shit outside of the right-wing media ecosystem.
Yes.
Like, this is not going the way, and we'll see, like, maybe Trump will get, like, an official investigation going, but this is not having the impact that, like, Comey coming out about Clinton's emails right before the election had. Because maybe people have gotten smarter, or maybe they've just gotten inured to the right-wing calling, you know, boogeyman over everything.
Or maybe they're just tired.
Yeah, or maybe they're like, well, this sounds exactly like the stuff that Trump is, that we've been hearing about Trump do, but not as bad. Why do I care about this? There's a plague.
And honestly, Biden not denying it is probably just the best move to just ignore this.
I mean, yeah, not giving
bullshit.
The story any oxygen.
Anyway, Is that a lackluster end to the episode? Perhaps. But I
Yeah, you know what's not a lackluster end to the episode?
What?
Fucking Rush Limbaugh's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
He is.
He is.
Thoughts and prayers for a speedy death.
Is he talking about that?
Yeah, he did. He just was like, yeah, I'm not winning, and I have no sympathy for Rush Limbaugh.
Is that why Michael Savage was like, Rush Limbaugh's a coward and a weakling for talking about his cancer?
Because they're all garbage. Because all
of
these
awful people
are trash. Fuck.
Well, we did it.
Rush Limbaugh. And also,
and
fuck
all the little
cancer.
Rush babies.
I hope Rush Limbaugh and cancer do. You remember in the first Lord of the Rings movie where Gandalf and the Balrog pull each other down into that?
Yeah.
I hope that's what happens with Rush Limbaugh and the concept of cancer. That
they
is
just take
my,
each other down into
preference.
A pit.
Yeah.
But so my issue here is that either Rush Limbaugh or cancer will come back with a vengeance later.
Yeah.
Even more powerful.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh the white or cancer the white.
Or cancer
kinda
the white.
Really
like,
depends.
Either one doesn't sound great because one of them is going to be more powerful.
Yeah.
Cut this whole analogy because
no,
otherwise
don't
it'll happen.
Cut this analogy. instead, think about who the writers of Rohan are in this theoretical.
Bikers for Trump.
Bikers for Trump or potentially... Kamala Harris.
it's kind of hard to say. It's either Kamala or the Bikers for Trump. We don't know.
Yeah.
We
just don't know. We cannot confirm or deny who the political equivalent of the writers of Rohan are in this
oh
theoretical.
Oh my.
But the episode's over.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
Bye.
Can check us out online at Worst Year Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow us too. I'm not going to say our handles. You'll find them.
Check it out.
But you know what? Keep on keeping on.
Our famous phrase that we do at the end of all the episodes. Keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
I'll smell you later. All right, bye.
Bye.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.